listening to BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon on what is now a sunny day. It didn't start off that way this morning where I live, but thank you very much for tuning in. Welcome to BizConnect, the bi-weekly business radio show with myself, Martin White, and my fabulous co-host,
Tracy Westall. Good afternoon, everyone.
Lovely to see you again.
And you.
We've been spending quite a bit of time together recently, haven't we?
But no, don't start spreading rumours.
More about that later. We've got some super guests with us, as always, in the studio. And if I could ask you to just introduce yourselves. To my right, we've got...
Hi, I'm Jo Humphrey from Origin Training and Swift First Aid Training.
Jo, welcome to the studio.
Hi, I'm Eddie Medina from First Aid Training and Origin Training as well.
Thanks, Eddie. Thanks for joining us.
And hi, everyone. I'm Bruce from Oasis.
Bruce, our old favourite, Oasis. Fantastic. Good. So we've got three parts to the show, really, for those of you who don't know. We're going to focus in on a bit of business news, first of all, for the first sort of half an hour, and then we're going to come and talk to Jo and Eddie about Origin and Swift, and then Bruce in the last third of the show as well. But if you guys would please feel free to kind of contribute at any point as we kind of whip through some of the local Kent topical business news. Tracy, what have you got for us?
I was quite sad to see that one of the local farm shops near where I live is actually closing. The Barnyard. It's been around for a good few years, and it's so sad to see that a little farm shop. It's got homegrown stuff, more and more, local produce that they want to sell, having to decide to close due to the lack of people coming into their farm shop. And it's such a sad state of affairs. And I know that farms are really trying to diversify their businesses as well. So if you're around that area, please do pop in. It's going to close on Sunday the 23rd, which is this weekend, which is so sad.
I've used farm shops in the past, and you can get such a diverse range of products in them. It's really good.
Exactly, yeah.
I thought the trend was going the other way. I mean, why are they struggling in particular?
I don't know.
Off the beaten track? Or?
Well, they are in Upchurch, so it's not as if they're on any main drag of any main road. Mm. But sometimes you need to go out and about and out in the countryside to find these little gems. Mm. You know, there are some fantastic little, like, farm shop kind of stores around. And I think, especially now, we're all starting to buy local, think more local. It's just a sad shame. Exactly. Mm. It's a shame that, this has come up and it's closing. So, I hope, I give them the best... best wishes for the future, and hopefully one day they'll be able to reopen.
Yeah. Well, let's hope they've at least got some distribution for their product in local supermarkets. Because I mean, where I am, Asda is very good at that. Actually, they take a lot of local product in my big Asda kind of superstore. So, as long as that's kind of happening, I guess then that's something, isn't it?
Definitely.
Also, the high street shops can also help there. Well, I'm local in Sittingbourne, and the high street is not as great as it used to be. But there are still people going, and it's relevant. So any local product that you put around the high street will be helpful.
Knock on doors and maybe get some product sighted there.
But that sort of brings me on nicely to this fabulous little thing that I never knew anything about. I was at home last Monday watching Meridian's Inside Out, and this Monday night they've got a bit about the co-innovation, which is in Dover. And by the sounds of it, I've never been there, and I am going to go and take a visit. But it used to be the old cooperative in Dover, and now they've just got little businesses in there. So it's very unique, lots of different businesses there, from arts to aquatics to hampers and treats.
So it's a special...
vegan and eco store. There you go, Bruce.
I'm definitely going to go visit.
You're going to have to go there, definitely. And something like that, I've always said, would do really well in Sittingbourne. And I know that there's a shop in Canterbury that does it where a lot of home businesses go in and they sell their wares and they alternate shift patterns to make sure that the shop is running. And that kind of sort of ethos and ethics behind some of these little small businesses to be able to work together with other small businesses and deliver a really nice sort of unique product as well that you cannot get from another high street. And I think that this is definitely something local authorities should be looking at.
So it's an incubator space, is it, for small and startup businesses?
Yeah, a bit like an indoor market kind of thing.
I was actually thinking about antique shops. A lot of antique shops run like that, where a lot of different dealers have like different cabinets in parts, and then they rotate the staff to look after the shop.
Yeah,
I've got one where I live actually, and it's called an emporium. But you're right; it's lots of different small kind of dealers inside one under one roof.
Ashford has also got a space
like Standard Quay.
Yeah, and that provides more of a kind of an experience for people to want to visit, doesn't it? Because one of the reasons I think that they're kind of, you know, I think there's another government task force looking into the high street, but I think one of the reasons they've identified is that, you know, it's not enough to have a Boots in a high street. You know, people need more of a reason to go than just the fact that there's a Boots or, you know, there's a Thomas Cook.
I think a lot of the Thomas Cook isn't around anymore, but yeah, he's travel now. But I think you're right. And the one thing is I think a lot of businesses that are, you know, your House of Fraser and everything else, it seems to be the same blueprint in every town. Mm. So you'll go to a town and you know that there's going to be the top 10 businesses there. But if you had a high street that maybe had one or two of those, but also primarily a lot of the smaller businesses, the more of the family-run businesses, then you're going to get a huge amount of footfall there. And then you're going to boost things like cafe owners and things like that. Yeah. So I think that the uniqueness of what people want to see in this day and age is more prevalent than it is to go and buy the same outfit from Chatham as you would from Broadstairs. So,
you need to think of your high street more as a destination experience rather than I need to go to the shop to get this.
I think Whitstable does that quite well, actually. Yeah, they've got a lot of independent shops there.
And also Faversham, something like that. I mean, I know there's been a mass of regeneration and funding for Faversham itself for that because of the history and everything else. But I think that, you know, if towns, especially failing high streets, were to look at it at a different angle, then I think that something like what they're doing here at the old co-op building in Dover, if they've got space, then I think local authorities should be encouraging these smaller businesses to come as a cooperative.
Yeah. That's a really good point, because a lot of these bigger stores that are now missing from the high streets, they've vacated quite large premises, haven't they?
Yes.
I mean, they've got a large shop floor that can quite easily be carved up into multiple units rather than having one big space where the business rates are always going to be prohibitive to anybody moving in anyway.
And you can make it into like a mini high street in if you've got like a big building that is now not being utilised, you can make it into an internal street. So you have all these little units and a walkway round, and then, you know, you can rent out these little units to smaller businesses at an affordable rate. The landlord gets money. You know, the building is being utilised. It's not going to waste. Mm. And smaller businesses are earning a living.
Yeah. Well, I think
a little bit like the offices we're in now. We've got all that now for sort of serviced offices and that, different shared office space. So why not do it for shops?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Great idea. Well, I think as our roving reporter, Tracy, you need to...
I need to investigate this further.
I've just nominated you, by the way. You need to get down there and report back.
I will do.
And I think really like the sound of it.
Yeah, and I think that anybody else out there that it does work in that environment where there's a cooperative of different small businesses and you're working together, then tweet us. No, get in contact with us, because we'd love to hear more about how you found it
success
as well.
Success stories, yeah.
Exactly,
and
yes.
Is it on Inside Out tonight, did you say?
It is, yes.
Natalie Graham, she presents that, doesn't she?
Yes.
Yeah, so 7:30, I think.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I might even tune into that. That sounds really interesting. Mm. But I think, you know, you raised a really interesting point. You talked a lot about Faversham, which is one of the reasons we were together after hours, as it were, last week. Yes. Because we were both at the brewery, weren't we?
Yeah, there is no real thread here and theme.
Other than beer.
Other than beer. And alcohol. But
Shepherd Neame are a great example, aren't they, yes, of a business who, I mean, they've been around for 300-odd years now. Yep. 1698, I think they are Britain's oldest brewer.
Yes.
But they're a great example of a business who, you know, that's evolved in so many different ways over that time. Yes. And I think their current model, we were talking about this, isn't necessarily to have a traditional high street pub that sells beer. It's about creating a destination experience where you can have good food, music, and have a night out, as opposed to going down the boozer, which you might have done, you know, 30, 50 years ago. And I was telling you, I was down at St. Margaret's Bay on Saturday, and they've taken over the, I think it's called the Smuggler's Arms down there, which used to be a kind of a freehold pub. And their model has gone very much towards food, you know, lunchtime trade, dining, evenings. You know, it's not about selling beer anymore. Beer is what they do as a brewing business. But actually, as a brand, Shepherd Neame is much more about an experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you can do it, in other words.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. I mean, to be honest with you, it's like, you know, McDonald's. What do McDonald's do? What are McDonald's? Okay, I know Bruce is probably like sitting here going, oh my God, the most disgusting burgers in the world, bearing in mind he's vegan. But McDonald's is not a burger company. They buy plots of land. And that is where their model is.
They're in real estate.
They are not burger making fast food chains. You know, so I think that businesses like what Shepherd Neame are doing is altering what the needs of the, you know, public are like.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, people do want an experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that the hole that's being plugged there for just going out for something to drink is being picked up a lot with the micro pubs.
You
now.
Made that point quite valid, yeah.
And they have been very, very successful. Mm-hmm. And they are small businesses.
Yeah.
You know, and they all help each other out, which I really like, because they get involved with the other small batch breweries. Even some of them do gin now, because they go through the small batch gin businesses as well. And I really like that dynamic of them all working together for the common goal, which is, you know, an experience to try new stuff that you can't get in your supermarket.
Because frankly, you know, how many people are loyal to Shepherd Neame as a beer brand? You know, I'll only go and drink in a Shepherd Neame pub because that's where they sell Spitfire. You know, that's not really the business they're in, is it?
No, and I think that sort of old, you know, thing now, there's a lot more freeholders around as well. And some of these other micro pubs will stock particular brands of larger breweries like Shepherd Neame and such like. Just because there is that market there, and especially in Kent, we are, you know, we know what we like to drink, and a lot of us, I say been brought up with, but not necessarily been brought up with, but, you know, have drank quite a bit of Shep's produce because, you know, we are Kent-based and it's a Kent-based firm.
But I also think it's a cultural change where you don't necessarily need to go to the pub just to drink.
Yeah.
You know, You may do that Saturday night, but during the weekend and so on, you just want to go to the pub. You may have a drink, but you also eat and socialize as well. And I think in that sort of sense, we're becoming a bit more Spanish, where we go out and enjoy the day, have a chat. People will drink, people will eat, and then you go home rather than just getting out to drink. And that's that.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a really positive change.
The binge drinking culture seems to be moving away from that and going for the socialising experience more.
Definitely.
I think it makes us happier being social.
You know, we love being social.
I looked at statistics the other day, and I was reading specifically about the Dutch people and how but they were some of the happiest people on earth. Mm. And on average, they socialized with their friends and family 16 hours a week. And, you know, when you think about 16 hours, that's a lot of time.
Yes.
Out of a weekly schedule. But they do that, and that just it keeps them happy. It keeps them relevant. It keeps them social with their friends and family. And that's really important because that's what life really is about, isn't it? Spending and doing things with our family and friends.
And I think that it is key to keep in touch, especially if you're in business. I mean, I know that I've been guilty of this where I've gone, oh, I can't do that this weekend. I'm too busy. I've got to do some work. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. Because your whole life becomes your business.
Yeah.
And then eventually you've got to give it up and go, right, I need some time with my friends. I need to speak to people. So definitely having a personal life. I mean, most of us actually go into business for the work-life balance. But I think that we could all stand here and say, what work-life balance? Because that doesn't happen when you run your own business. But I think that being conscious of going out and socialising is really, really good for your mental health and well-being. And, you know, mental health and well-being is so key, especially if you are running your own business and making sure that, you know, your friends understand what you do. You're a shoulder to cry on. They're a shoulder to cry on for you. And that you've got somebody to talk to as well. That doesn't necessarily have to be in a business forum, but because they're your friends and they understand who you are and your personality, I think that's also very key.
Good advice, so, good advice. And I mean, just to finish on Shepherd Neame, you know, for anybody that's kind of looking for you know, great examples of kind of a business value proposition, you know, go and watch their do the brewery tour at Shepherd Neame and watch their watch the intro from the voiceover or listen to the voiceover intro from Jonathan Neame at the beginning of their video, because that just sets out what they're all about as a business. And you listen to that and you think, yeah, I really get that. And actually, I buy into that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, what they haven't done is repeat it on their website, which they really ought to do. They've just got it tucked away on a corporate video that you only see if you're on the brewery tour.
Yeah.
But so that, you know, that's a great example of a business that's been around for 322 years.
Yeah.
That's continually having to reinvent itself.
Which is good because we have had quite a few in the last sort of like year. Old businesses, some of them going back, you know, centuries, that have failed and have lost their way because, you know, they're not diversifying.
They haven't changed.
And they haven't changed. Mm. And I know that when we did the brewery tour with the CICM Kent branch, it was amazing and everybody that came along thought it was absolutely fantastic. Mm. So, you know, personally, my thanks goes out to those guys because they really did put on a really good tour. Mm. And, you know, being a Kent-based business, we should support them as well as we support everybody else. Yeah.
Definitely.
But, you know, in any business, you've got to give people a reason, haven't you?
Yeah.
And, you know, if that's not clear and...
And it was a really good night as well. Mm. And the food was really good and, you know, the tour was excellent and everyone had a great time. Mm. And that's what it is about customer satisfaction, but also getting your business across, which I think they did really well.
Yeah, they're very clear on that.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned kind of very old established businesses. I think I read in the news today about Laura Ashley.
Yeah.
You know, I think their sales are 10% down.
Yes.
And on the back of that, they're making a cash call. And you think, crikey, you know, a 10% reduction in sales, you would think they might be able to kind of weather that, but...
Well, they lost 14.3 million in the last year up to June 19.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money.
It is. But, you know, for a company that size, is it that huge? But it just shows you, you know, how tight the margins have probably been squeezed for a business like that. If a 10% reduction in sales actually means they need to kind of raise some emergency cash.
Yeah. I mean, but then again, it was sold out to Coos Malaysian United Industry. Which, you know, might not have the same kudos as it would have done under Laura Ashley.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, they've bought a business, they want to make enough profit on that business. Mm. And it is a shame, yet again, you know, is it because of their products, the product placement, what they actually sell? But they do have a specific range. You know, it's not something that you can just go off the wall and create something. Laurie Ashley are renowned for a particular range of products and the style.
Mm. And maybe that style is
The style's not really what we want
so
to
you
see
evolve
today.
Again. It's that same message again, isn't it? You know, learn from Shepherd Neem, you know, evolve.
Are you wanting a few crates of free beer here?
I'm not.
It's only Monday. In fact,
what I do want is for you to tell us all about this. I mean, we were at Shepherd Neem on a Chartered Institute of Credit Management evening.
Yes.
It was your AGM, your East Kent or Kent AGM.
Kent Branch AGM.
And on the back of that, you've got a fabulous event coming up in March that I think people should know about. So tell us more about that.
Yes, the Chartered Institute of Credit Management Kent Branch are actually delivering a conference in business finance, and it is geared to businesses in Kent to really have a good outline of what business finance is about, how to get great business finance, how to stabilise your business, get great cash flow, make great profits. And the speakers we've got are absolutely amazing. And in all honesty, this is a £25 charge to which goes to a charity locally. And you will be put in front of people who are absolute experts and anything to do with business finance. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is literally an event that you cannot miss if you are in business, because this is going to give you some really good, knowledgeable subject matter to take back to your business, have a review and go, do you know what? This is what I need to do. Mm-hmm. And it's all about stabilizing businesses, SMEs, small to mid to large SMEs, whoever you are, if you employ people, and more importantly, if you've got credit management staff and credit controllers and people that are in finance, get them to come along. Mm-hmm. Really find the impact of what this is all about and actually get them engaged with the news of the businesses around. And it's going to be an absolutely amazing event. So please do check it out on Eventbrite under CICM Kent. You cannot miss it. It's at the Grand in Folkestone on March the 17th, 9 a.m. till 4:30. We've even got a fantastic prize draw with the business card raffle.
And lunch.
Lunch, of course, obviously.
And the event is being sponsored by Shepherd Neem.
No. Nice try. We had
Greg Taylor on, didn't we?
Yeah, we had Greg Taylor and Adrian Dante from
McIntyre Hudson. So Greg's going to be talking about business finance, and I mean, we're going to talk about, you know, the pitfalls of kind of becoming or wanting to be or going into kind of business as an entrepreneur for the first time, and you know, business finance is one of those kind of
huge
stumbling blocks when you're starting a bit. Where do I get the money from?
Exactly, and we've got Alison Palmer from FSB. Mm-hmm. She's going to be talking about the great work the FSB are doing with the government, and also about the pitfalls that SMEs are having, the births and deaths of unfortunate businesses. You know, it's just a really good, knowledgeable, just come and find out more about what you can do.
The information.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, you know, I'm going to be talking,
others,
of course, because, you know, I have to. And also now being the vice chair of the Kent branch of the CICM. Yeah. But
you're
have
the big knob, aren't you?
Excuse me.
The big cheese.
The big, I'm half the big cheese.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be an amazing event. So please do come along. You know, £25 and it goes to a local charity, and you're going to get so much expert advice for 25 quid.
And a free lunch.
And a free lunch. And to be fair, the lunch is looking rather tasty.
Good.
I have to say. So book it on Eventbrite.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to that. Is there any more kind of business news we need to cover off before we play some music and introduce our first guest?
Well, do you know what? At the beginning of the year, I promised myself that I was going to read a book a month.
Oh.
Okay. Just because I needed to do something for myself, and I didn't want to read a business book, because obviously you read a business book and you think business all the time, and I needed to come off of that. So far I've read 5 books.
Wow.
So I'm sort of averaging 1 a week. But I'm really sad to see, I do love an old-fashioned bookshop.
Mm.
But a Rochester bookshop, Roadmaster Books, has been trading for 44 years. And Malcolm Wright, who actually runs this lovely little business, he is actually retiring. And so, you know, this lovely little establishment that's been going for 44 years is going to disappear from a high street. And I think that is so sad. And I love the fact that a few weeks ago, a guy from a bookshop in, I think it was Sussex, did a tweet to say he hadn't sold one book one day, and then everyone got on the bandwagon and people were just phoning up and ordering, but just send me a book. I don't care what it is. Yeah. Just send me a book and then post it out to me and I'll pay for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really re-energised his business. And although I'll use Kindle, I do love a book.
Yeah, you see, I'm old school. I like a proper
book
because it takes me away from the devices of the modern modern age.
And some of these old bookshops, they've got some really weird and wonderful books that you wouldn't find anywhere else. Yeah. And even if you do, if you're one of these people that does an Amazon or an eBay, you might not find them anywhere else but in an old bookshop.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I've been in that bookshop a number of times, actually, so it really is sad to see it go.
It's a shame that nobody wanted to take it over. But
I know. So if anybody's out there that really wants to take it on, you know, who's an avid reader, I mean,
there is an Amazon expose on this week, I think, isn't there, on the telly, so you never know, there might be a resurgence in small bookshops after,
I hope
after,
so, you know, because you know,
a Panorama special, I think, so
right.
We wait with bated breath to find out what's going on there.
Yes,
thank you for that, Tracy. Sad news, but there we go. Sign of the times again, isn't it?
It is.
Right, I think we're going to move on.
Are you going to play us a song?
We're going to play a little bit of music, and then we're going to talk to our first guests, Joe and Eddie, from Swift First Aid and Origin Computer Training. So we will see you on the other side of this.
You're listening to BizConnect. Tweet us live at Kent_Biz.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. And Tracy, I know you're a bit of a music buff. So
I know what I like and I like what I know. Yeah.
So who was that?
R.E.M.
R.E.M. Well I done. Know. You're like me. You're an 80s child, aren't you?
Well, watch it.
And
I just
automatically assume everybody is of my vintage when clearly they're not. I'm an 80s child. That was R.E.M. and that was Everybody Hurts. And on that note, we will welcome our first guests, Eddie and Joe, from Swift First Aid Training and Origin Computer Training. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be a part of the show today.
It's lovely to have you both. So, Joe, just as a kind of a brief introduction for those of us who aren't familiar with Swift and Origin, tell us what you guys do.
Okay, well, I joined Origin, well, almost 2 years ago. Origin are not a new company, you'll be surprised to hear. It has been going about 28, 29 years.
Wow.
And it was based in Crowborough, East Sussex. And Eddie bought it as a growing concern because the former owner wanted to retire. So it came across to Kent after Eddie bought it, and it's been going strong ever since.
Super. So, Eddie, are you in the market for a bookshop by any chance?
I was going to say that.
So, I mean, on a serious note, though, when we talk about computer training, what are we actually talking about here? What do you teach people to do?
So, at Origin, we specialise in the Microsoft Office software, right from sort of your basics, Word, Excel, PowerPoint. But we also do like the specialist stuff, more sort of the Power BI, Microsoft Project, Visio. So, right across the applications they do, really.
Because I have to say, I do have some personal experience of Microsoft and their latest product range, because I was forced to finally upgrade my computer hardware recently from a very old Lenovo brick that I was using with Windows 7 to Windows 10. And I have to say, I reckon since I've had it over the last, well, I've had it for 2 weeks now, I reckon I'm 20% more productive just by having an upgrade package like that than I was before. So with your help, presumably I could get even more productive as a business owner working in my own business.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, businesses pay a lot for the Office 365 licenses now and all the programs. So why are they not training the staff to use that functionality that is there that they're paying for yeah. Microsoft to obviously speed up things in their business?
That's a really interesting point, isn't it? Do you think it's a given that, you know, when you interview or you know, when you open job post a new role, either kind of internally or externally, do you think it's a given that people just kind of assume you're going to walk into the office on your first day at work, switch on a computer and kind of get on with it and know exactly how everything works? Because I mean, people must be at all sorts of different levels in terms of their ability there, surely.
I know how to switch a computer on. I know how to use the fundamental stuff purely because I've used it for a long time. But when things come on, new stuff, I just get my head around OneDrive. I know I'm probably so far behind from other people. But it's not something I'd never had to deal with when I worked in a business, into a company as an employee. You know, but now as I have my own business, I've got all these extra functions that I need to understand about. And quite frankly, I used to think I was pretty savvy. But I think it's moved so far forward that I cannot keep up.
You're right.
And that's the thing with Microsoft. They're always like again, reinventing themselves and the programs constantly, and with all new features and that. But if you don't know how to use them features, what is the point?
And I mean, we might be accustomed to using an application day in, day out, but that doesn't mean we're using it efficiently, does it? I mean,
absolutely not.
Excel is a great example. I mean, I use Excel quite a lot, but I'm not very good at importing other Excel files into a file or doing pivot tables and things, you know, lookup tables, and, you know, that stuff is just way over my head, but I know it would be incredibly valuable to me.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays, really, in an application like Excel, we probably most of the time using about not even 10% of its real capacity. However, yes, you got a lot of functionality, and it's like the new mobile phones that you don't need to use absolutely everything. But the things that you use, you need to use it efficiently.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a case that because you used to do it the same way all the time, then you just carry on doing a copy and paste from file to file, opening 20 files, and it's taking you 3 hours.
Yeah.
When that could be done with a small macro, that could be done with a small formula. But you don't know that.
I am.
I think I might be guilty of something like that.
I was going to say, I am the cut and paste king. I really am. Those are two of the most commonly used functions on any computer hardware that I own.
Control X, Control V. That's it. Yeah.
So, and apart from anything else, Joe, I guess it's well known, isn't it, that if you invest in training staff, they actually feel more valued. And if your member of staff feels more valued, they're far more likely to turn up to work 5 days a week as opposed to kind of taking a sickie now and again.
Yeah, most definitely. And there are actually stats out there that, you know, the retention of staff is a lot higher when staff are trained to use systems correctly. You know, they do feel happier in their jobs. They do feel like the employer is investing in them as people. So the workplace becomes a happier place.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always said that training is not a cost.
No.
Do not ever look at training as a cost. No. It is an investment.
Yeah.
You're investing in your staff to make sure that they do a fantastic job and have the skills and knowledge to utilise the systems you've got in place far better than they would do if they had not had that knowledge and had not had that training.
So what's the starting point, Joe? If I think that there might be members of staff in my business who need upskilling, as it were, how do you help me identify where there's an opportunity to do that? And how do you physically kind of get to grips with that? Do you put somebody in front of a computer and ask them to do something and then monitor how quickly it takes them to do it? How do you come to me with a recommendation?
With Excel, PowerPoint and Word, we have got assessment questionnaires we can send out, which helps us understand the different levels of the people in the organisation, or quite often the HR departments or so forth kind of give us an indication as well. So it's just about discussing the needs of the business, really.
Because the training has to be tailored to the needs of my business. There's no point just investing in a generic training course if ultimately 90% of the people there, you're teaching them to suck eggs. I mean, it's...
A lot of our courses are actually bespoke now to the needs of the companies that are asking for the training. Yeah. So no one size fits all.
Yes. Eddie,
It's basically a combination of there are some generic training in particular when it comes to, for example, Excel. We'll be talking about Microsoft Word because there is an assumption that most of the employees know X, Y, and Z. It normally happens on the personal development plan that is done once a year, where people are coming and say, I would like to be able to progress in here and progress in there. And that's where we come along, and we are able to provide that generic training, but also more companies now are looking at, okay, I'm fine with the generic training, but we need to complete the budgets today and the core few report, profit and loss balance. We want to be able to do this way.
And I wonder how many staff come to their employer as part of their kind of, you know, their year-end review and next year's objectives and put their hand up and say, I'd like some IT training. I mean, it's probably not top of the list, is it? You know, it might be, I'd like an away day on kind of four-wheel drive buggies roaming through the countryside on a team-building exercise. I can't imagine IT training is kind of top of the list. So the employer needs to be proactive on that front, I guess, don't they? To kind of
It's normally part of the budget, and then as it goes along, you get diluted and all the things that are deemed more important at the time.
Like the staff Xmas party.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, Bruce, you're very hot on this as well. This all comes down to business productivity, doesn't it? Because if actually, you know, you employ somebody to do a job of work 7.5 hours a day, and actually, you know, how much of that time is actually spent doing that job of work? Absolutely. And you're always going to have, you know, a kind of a natural kind of non-realization of working hours within a working day. That's fine. But actually, if somebody just isn't physically able to do their job as well as they might be able to because they just don't know how to use something properly, that's a completely different
We have to give our staff the tools to do the job we pay them to do. So, you know, whether that means training in office products or, in my case, training in the product we use or supplying a product that helps them do something in a different way that helps them. But training is essential in all those elements. So what these guys do, you know, that starts from we have to do the same. We have to train our customers in using our system and
the advantages
or a process or whatever it is we want them to use.
The advantage you have, I guess, is that, you know, when you're doing an install of a software product into a client's business, the training comes up front with that install, doesn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
Eddie and Joe, you're having the problem of having to sort of...
Well, you have to identify first where the problem lies.
Identify and then retrofit training into something that kind of is already there.
So in where companies, where they would really all do well in is those companies that actually, when they do their staff revisions once a year or once every 6 months, they identify what's needed. And on the back of that should be going, we need you to know more about Excel or more about Word. And that's where these guys really come in.
So build it
training
into...
Training is so important.
Build it into the formal kind of staff appraisal process, I guess.
Well, this is it. But sometimes you do have the issue with the persons that do it. You know, some people become a manager and they have no managerial skills to manage their staff.
Right.
So, you know, it's a big, massive circle. But at the end of the day, you don't get behind a wheel of a car if you've not learnt to drive. Because it's dangerous, quite frankly. And the same should be said for somebody doing a particular role. And when things have moved on and things have been, you know, this is what you've got to use, well, you need to train them.
Maybe it should be, I mean, how does CPD come into this and you know, is it something that should be kind of built into a framework like that for staff or?
Yeah, I think all companies should have a framework to invest in training for their staff. Mm. I mean, I've worked at companies in the past where you've literally had no training, and personally, I felt very unhappy there. I didn't know what I was doing. Mm. I didn't feel confident in the role I was doing. So ultimately, I left. Yeah. So you know, it's very important.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's important to make a part of the process and it's important to follow it up. It's true that sometimes we believe that we can do more than we can.
Mm.
And because we used to do it that way all the time, then we sometimes fail to explore otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But with time and if, you know, given the appropriate budgets in place and everything else, I think it's a good opportunity for the businesses to apply that they discuss in the personal development plans and, you know, execute it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Origin is only one business, obviously, that you guys manage. And another business I'd like to talk about is Swift First Aid. So, Joe, over to you again. Tell us all about Swift.
So,
and then we'll come on to talk to Eddie about how he owns all these businesses and how he finds the time to manage them all.
So, back end of last summer, Origin purchased Swift First Aid Training, which was predominantly based in Essex. But obviously, we saw it as a growing concern. And we're basically expanding it into Kent while still servicing clients in Essex and London area. Swift has been going about 8-9 years now, providing robust health and safety and first aid training to individuals and business staff. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole host of first aid training packages, health and safety training packages, which includes sort of manual handling, health and safety in the workplace, even food hygiene and COSH is all part of it. Fire safety, very important. So, yeah, it's...
Now, first aid training... isn't a kind of a luxury that, you know, you can afford to ignore, is it? In fact, it's not a luxury at all. There is a duty of care that employers have towards all their staff, and you have to have a designated health and safety, a first aid person in the business, don't you? Yeah. Is that how it works?
Yeah, the guidelines do kind of state. It's kind of a bit of a difficult one to decide because you have to kind of assess whether your business is low hazard, high risk, and how many people you've got in the business and what they're doing. But certainly if you're like a big office with 25 to 50 people, you're going to need at least one first aider trained in emergency first aid at work. If you're a higher risk, whether you're a manufacturer, you're in construction, let's say you've got 5 to 50 people on site, you need one first aider trained in emergency first aid at work or first aid at work. But it's always good to have more than that because you need to account for sickness, people on holiday, shift changes, people working over the weekends.
And again, it's one of those sort of areas, I think, you know, first aid training where, as an individual, I'd like to have those skills outside of work because if anything ever, you know, I mean, I play golf and, you know, it's well known that a lot of people, you know, suffer from strokes and cardiac arrests on the golf course. You know, and even simple things like knowing how to use a CPR and...
the AED machine.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a stat for you. If you're actually doing CPR on someone... if you're actually able to find and use an AED, the chances of survival for that person will raise from 6% to 74% if you find an AED and use it on the person. So it's really important, you know, so we get the training out there.
We've got one at our golf club in reception.
That's no good if you're on the 10th hole, is
it? Well, I mean, you can't, unfortunately, you can't plug them into trees.
That's where Martin's going to run back to the clubhouse again.
Right, and I don't mind doing that. I really don't mind doing that. But what I would struggle with is you know, you've still got to understand how to use it. Now, I know people say it's so easy, you
it
wouldn't
is
believe.
Easy.
And I know, but you've still got to read instructions.
No. It tells you how to do it.
And
it'll tell you if you put the sticker in the wrong place.
It's dummy's guide too.
But it would, I'd feel so much more comfortable in that, confident in that situation if I'd had some basic training.
Yeah. I mean, as a company director, I'm guilty. I have seen before we had the company decide about, oh, you need to get first aid training. And it has come to me and I'd be like, yeah, one of these days, you know, I'm going to do this because it sounds good. But if instead of that, if you go out an office with more than 5 people, you need to have a name officer. If something happens to your office and you got your employee liability insurance that you think that's covering, the first question they're going to ask you, do you have your self-assessment regulations in place? Where are the books? Who is the first officer? And you go, oh, I don't know what that is. So if you come to me and say, you know, if you go more than 5 people, you need to do this, then I will put it in my diary, will come with more priority.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think it's also good to have first aid training because you could save life.
I mean, to be honest, I mean, I've lapsed, to be fair. I have lapsed and it is on my agenda to do this year. But I have actually been in a situation where I've had to give resuscitation to somebody and it is hard work. But having the knowledge and having a 3-day course, I felt confident.
Right.
And also, it is a myth that unless you cannot get sued for implementing first aid in a first aid situation. But I honestly also am a big advocate to teach children how to do it as well, especially in secondary education, because even if you think you're doing it wrong, anything is better than nothing. And, you know, and first aid training should come all the time, priority, as standard. And, you know, you can save a life.
So, again, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, businesses should kind of take the initiative on regardless and say, look, you know, we'd like our people You know, and let's not call them staff. We'd like our people to have these skills,
yeah,
whether they need them in the workplace or not. They might need them out of the workplace.
I mean, mine was something in the high street.
Yeah, exactly.
On the commute to the workplace. Yeah. You just don't know.
And if you need it in that situation, you're going to think, thank God Swift put me through that training.
Mm.
You know, that's a really powerful thing, isn't it? Thank God I did that training. So.
And I mean, I've just had a quick squiz at your website. And you've got so much information here as well about all the different training courses. And you've even got some online training as well.
Yeah, there's a whole online platform which is full of short courses, which will, again, will contribute to your CPD learning.
Mm.
And I've taken a couple myself, and they really are quite good. You know, they're very informative, and they're not expensive either. So even for low cost, you can get yourself quite knowledgeable on the health and safety areas.
Wow. Mm. Yeah. And I mean, can you really put a price on first aid training course, for instance? It's going to save a colleague's life.
Mm. And you know, we're always, you know, going back to, you know, the IT training as well. We're always kind of... you know, there's so much pressure on, you know, on people inside organisations to kind of deliver from day one.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's just assumed that they're going to come in and do that job and grow the business or whatever it is that they're going to do. Mm. But if we haven't trained them, or we haven't at least asked the question, you know, to what level have you been trained?
Mm.
How can we be sure that actually they're equipped to do that job?
Exactly.
And then, you know, we're going to kind of point the finger at them a year down the line and say, do you know what, you haven't actually added any value to the business and, you know, we're going to have to let you go. And it's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think some employers expect people just rock up on their door, just fully trained up, so it's kind of not their responsibility. Yeah. But I do think it is employer's responsibility as well.
Yeah,
very much so.
I'm now interested in hearing about how Eddie acquired these businesses.
Yes, I am. So that was going to be my next question, because Eddie, you are for me the sort of the classic entrepreneur in many ways. And we spoke kind of before the show briefly about your journey, but just as a very kind of quick overview, you were living in, you grew up in the Canary Islands, is that correct?
That's correct, yes. I grew up in Gran Canaria.
Gran Canaria. Mm-hmm.
So I moved into the UK. I've been here for about 20 years. Uh-huh. With my wife, who I knew her in, I met her in Gran Canaria as well.
Fantastic. So she's Spanish as well?
No, she's British.
Oh, she's British.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's she's British, yes. And well, basically with the business, I think I originally, my main area is on IT, software development. However, within that area, there were a lot of opportunity for training while I was there. And I thought an opportunity to kind of capture into that particular market. On the more personal level, I think the way I have been able to get around getting other businesses or acquiring businesses is to get the fear of failure out of the way.
That's really interesting. The fear of failure. What is the fear of failure? How can you put your? I mean, you know, it's not something you can write down easily, is it? And
well,
what do we mean by that?
I think there are many ways, and for everyone, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
My particular way was by the business that I have. It was a relocation business back in 2008 when we had the property collapse. So I was on a business relocating people from the UK back into the Canary Islands. Mm-hmm. And it was a very bad time and acquired a lot of debt and everything else. Mm-hmm. But I think you reach a point where you're not so scared about failing because you are in a point where you could then possibly be lower.
Right.
And then you then look at things slightly different. So instead of thinking about, oh, I'm going to borrow this money and I may not going to be able to pay, you're more looking at, okay, I have been there before.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I have a plan, then it's okay to take the risk.
In your situation, you had a business that had been trading quite successfully. The property crash hit everybody, 2008, 2009, very, very badly. So your business effectively disappeared overnight, I guess.
Yes, yes.
and left you with a lot of residual debt.
Correct.
But rather than walking away at that point, you decided, because you could have done, presumably, you could have just gone bankrupt or,
correct,
you know, put the business into liquidation and let somebody else manage that. you decided to come to an agreement with your creditors to pay off that,
gradually,
that debt over time, because you, on a moral level, you didn't feel comfortable with that. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I also have a lot of support from my wife and my wife family as well. Mm-hmm. We had kids at the time as well, so we were in a situation where I had to talk to the bank about how much money I was spending on my mobile phone. Mm-hmm. So, so, but I was supported, but also I felt at the time it was the right decision not to declare myself bankrupt, mm-hmm. but to find a way to pay off. So at the time I was with the different banks, Barclays, NatWest. Mm-hmm. So they gave me the opportunity to say, okay, mm-hmm. instead of setting you up, let's see how we can get around this.
Mm-hmm. Consolidate the debt and
So
it took a couple of years to pay back, mm-hmm. but with the support and everything else, we mm-hmm. we managed to pay back everything.
Yeah. That's and then, good. And so, and so you're saying that that experience then gave you, in a kind of, in a perverse way almost, the confidence to have another go. You know, it wasn't a kind of a, I never want to do that again, because crikey, that was just so horrible. It actually made you less less inhibited about trying again. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, there were times that were, particularly when it was happening.
Yeah, of course.
It was happening that, you know, I wasn't thinking about anything else. But it's true that during that period, there was a learning period, which at the time, obviously, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But during that period where I had a lot of debts and a lot of things to pay, I'm kind of managed to learn how to handle money.
Mm. Important.
So it was
yeah
an opportunity, but at the time it didn't look like one. but then you get to handle money, to manage money in a slightly different way. Mm-hmm. And one of the worst enemies of managing money is fear.
Right. Mm.
So it's okay when you if you borrow money to buy an extra large house or a big car, you don't know how to you're gonna pay. That's dangerous. But if you borrow money to buy a property because you're gonna get X amount of income, mm-hmm. then that's okay. As long as you have a plan. It doesn't mean that always gonna happen, mm-hmm. but you mm-hmm. got a plan, and you know you have you are better likely to be able to pay back and make money on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how people make money.
Okay. Yep. So you have to look at everything on that kind of commercial level. Mm. As a business owner, that's really. I mean, I guess a lot of people don't do that when they go into business, do they?
They
fall into going into business, and it's very much a kind of a lifestyle business proposition. They're trying to replace the salary that they might have been earning as a member of staff somewhere, you know, by thinking they can start a business. And
but if you look at most of the larger, you know, the millionaires out there that got big businesses, they got a string of failed businesses behind them and businesses that they really, really struggled, like, you know, wading through molasses to get to the other end. And it is all about learning and, you know, and the whole thing about being in business is one massive learning curve. And it's not to be frightened about, you know, the pitfalls of something that you can, you know, trip over in business. But it's just making sure that you've got a really good, fair mind and a plan of where you want to go. Yeah. And also to have the backing of friends and family, which, you know, as absolutely. I said earlier, is really paramount for your own mental well-being. But also, you know, don't be afraid to speak to people that you think, do you know what, I think these guys can help me and speak to somebody who's an expert in that particular area, which is something I always say. So if you need people in your business to understand computing better and platforms better, then they need training. So like going to Oregon would be an ideal platform for them to go to. Mm. But knowledge is king. Every day is a school day.
I mean, it will scar you, I guess, Eddie. I mean, that first business failure you had, you know, it left its emotional kind of scars on you, didn't it? I mean, we're not saying we're not saying everybody should set out to fail in business so that they can then open another business and be more successful. I mean, it must have been very emotional.
Yeah, at the time it was emotional and stressful, but we reached a point where there was nothing that we could do differently. Mm. So we just had to go on.
Right.
You
have to draw the line.
Yeah.
And say, look, this is, we cannot go on anymore.
And this is how it is, and then you just have to carry on.
Yes, yes.
And obviously now taking over the businesses, and particularly taking over Origin Fair. Mm. So obviously having joined the team has been it's been crucial for this period of time. Mm. And then, but also with Joe, we have Catherine, Martin, Michael Robertson, and Lee as well. Mm-hmm. And they're all part of the business. And I have taken the decision that in the area where I need help, I want to get the people who knows what to do, even if it costs money, even if you don't make as much money as you could possibly do, trying to do everything yourself.
Yeah.
I think you need to surround yourself by the best people.
That's good advice as well, isn't it?
Great advice.
Guys, we are going to have to leave it there, unfortunately, for the minute. But I think we need to get you back on again and kind of explore some of that in a bit more detail.
Yeah.
But what we are going to do is play a bit more music, and that is going to be our introduction to our next studio guest.
He's sitting here in anticipation.
So we will play a bit of tunage, and we will see you on the other side of this. I think we couldn't really have picked a more relevant bit of tunage to introduce our next guest. Tracy, who was that? Or what was that?
Something by numbers.
So,
I have no say on these tenuous songs.
The song
just throws them at me. I don't know.
The song was Living by Numbers.
That's it, Living by Numbers.
By a band called Musique, I believe. Another 80s tune. But anyway, enough of that. Bruce, Kid, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Oasis Operational Accounting Systems.
That's it.
So, what does that mean, Bruce? Apart from having something to do with numbers.
That's fine. It means we are not accountants. We're a software company, and our business is to supply software to the southeast corner of the UK to customers who need to change what they do.
Right, okay. So we're talking about business process, I guess, are we here?
Yes.
So everything from stock control
Yeah.
Through to payroll.
That's it.
Through to, I mean, give me some other examples.
Everything, from the cash book, the nominal, the bank accounts, the fixed asset register.
Right.
If you work in construction and you work with subcontractors, you've got certain rules to abide to. Our software deals with that. Obviously, you mentioned payroll and all the new rules and regulations as they come out every year. And then obviously it's all integrated, and that's, I think, is one of the areas or the key issues for me, is what we try and give to our customers as a full experience. Uh-huh. So a fully integrated system that will just talk to each other, whether you are an engineer that's out on the road or if you collect waste somewhere. So right. It's whatever just connects the business in all different ways.
So and so it doesn't have to be, and in fact, I guess in many instances, it isn't a suite of products from one provider. It's about being able to bolt together the best kind of products for my business requirements in the marketplace. So you work with people like Easy Stock,
yes,
I know.
That's correct.
On a stock kind of management and control.
Stock optimization.
Yep.
Totally, yeah.
You work with Pegasus.
Yep, absolutely. Pegasus provides me with my base system. So they're very good with things like financials and supply, some areas in supply chain outside of stock control, which is why we brought Easy Stock in to help with that area.
So that's
and they're fantastic
sale.
with their payroll side.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the core area of the business. Uh-huh. And then on top of the Pegasus product, yeah, we have others that we then link to that or link. So we've got, like you mentioned, Easy Stock. We've also got a product on board called Podfather.
Oh, right.
Podfather stands for Proof of Delivery Father, effectively. Uh-huh. But it's a tool that allows us on a mobile phone or a tablet or whatever we have in the field to connect to our database and to get our customer to either sign. We can take pictures. We have documentations they can have. We can take an order. All kinds of different interactions we can have that then just filters back to the
right.
to the system.
And this... So. This again, you know, as with you guys, Joe and Eddie, this must be a continually evolving theatre, if you like, of kind of new product development, innovation, the Internet of Things, as you
absolutely,
call it, that's
yeah.
kind of starting to take over our kind of day to day lives.
I mean, it's constantly evolving technology, is anyway, you know, just like Windows 7. Recently stopped their support. The next thing is Windows 8.1 or whatever. It's all constantly moving forward. And with that, we have to too.
Yeah.
So if you're in software, in the software business, things have to move forward. Internet of Things, that's a really interesting concept because it connects anything that can have a mobile chip in it effectively
yeah.
to do things when you're not there. So yeah. whether it's order beer for your fridge from Shepherd Neame.
How do we always get back to booze?
What a novel idea. I don't think they do that yet.
But that's the idea, you know. So it just links everything together. And I think the first step nowadays is where businesses want that to happen. They don't really want Mavis to sit and spend 2 days in a week to put 200 timesheets on. Mm. They just want to import it and get it in ready. They'd rather let Mavis spend an hour to check it.
Right.
You know, so it's just how business is changing, is interlinking stuff, integrating areas so that it all works together rather than against each other because humans, we get tired, we make errors, you know, we're talking about something that happened at home while we're putting a timesheet in and just things go wrong. It's just how it works.
Mm.
So by integrating everything, it just gives a different experience to the user in the business place. And again, you know, it links to what these guys do because if we give them a tool to do something better than they normally do, it keeps them happier, keeps us happier in our workplace, you know. So,
and as a business owner, there's no way that I would even want to start kind of researching the marketplace on that level to find out what would work in my business, what wouldn't work.
Correct.
I mean, the way you guys work, similar to Joe and Eddie, is I guess you have to sit down with the business owner, understand maybe some of their legacy systems, understand what they want to do moving forwards in terms of functionality and automation and process.
Yeah. For me, it's vitally important to find out why they think they need to change.
Right.
Because that is the trigger that is going to make them change what they are doing.
Yes, yes.
They're trying to achieve something different, or they want to eliminate a process, or they want to add a different process, and they don't know how to do that. That's where we come in, and that's where we can help. So we try and solve a problem. I always say I do solution selling.
Yeah.
I don't call myself a normal salesman because
I walk away. If I can't solve your problem, then it's no use. What's my software going to do for you? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So I do solution selling, and if there's a problem, my software can solve that problem, and then we can do something. Right. So that's how we work. Yeah.
So is that normally what happens? Does the business owner or the management team, the operations guy, for example, do they come across a problem in the business where they need outside help?
There's often
a
trigger.
Or is it more
proactive
than that?
There's often, I mean, there's two ways. So it's often a trigger for those companies who come to us who are new customers to Oasis. There's a trigger that makes them pick up the phone and makes them start looking at a different piece of software, potentially because they've got a problem in how they operate. The other is proactive, because we've got a customer base that we email to, we talk to on a constant basis. We know what their problems are because we give them their help desk. So on the back of the help desk, one of the guys in the office will say that, you know, that customer ABC are having these issues. They might need more users because they can't get logged, etc. So it's a real proactive thing to get on top of what they do, or they are changing the business. How are you going to accommodate what they do? Are we going to help them change the process they currently have in our system to make changes for what they want to do? So that way we keep our current base engaged with what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, what I like about what you do, Bruce, is that you actually, although you're a solution person, in a business, you actually, the way you engage with your client base and extend that out to other businesses with your events as well, because you've got a lot, you always have a lot of events and they're all very knowledgeable. Yeah. And, you know, I've had the privilege, although maybe not the attendees, of me actually taking part in a couple of Bruce's events. But, you know, I found that being at those events, it has really enabled people that are not your clients per se engage with your clients and go, do you know what, this is a real solution to my problem. And I think the way that you've developed your business into working with the likes of Easy Stock, etc., to really help fundamentally sort out the accountancy side of things, so they know where they are at any given time. And I know that within the construction sector, which you and I both have worked in, it can be a minefield for these businesses.
It's a proper minefield for them.
Because, you know, they do need a bit of hand-holding. But, you know, definitely I would suggest anybody out there look at Oasis website and have a look at their events, because you are going to find something that you're going to learn from something. Yeah. Somebody there is going to give you a really big, good golden nugget of information. And I know that you guys are on social media quite a bit.
For me, collaborating with other people is absolute key. That's how we all can, you know, take our message across to the businesses and the people out there. For me, it's vital to collaborate with other people, because they can offer something I can't to the audience I have.
Let's talk about an event that you've got coming up then, because in March you've got a payroll seminar.
I've got a big payroll seminar coming up on the 5th of March at the New Ashford Picture House. It is our annual payroll seminar, which is really aimed at my customers, but I do open it up to anybody to come, because it's important for me to see, so people can see how we do things, what Oasis is about. And also it gets them to speak to the customers I have there, which are normally around 30 or so of our customers. And, you know, there's no one as good as your customers who can tell people what you do. And I'm not scared of doing that. So. But we get people together. But this event is aimed at the time of year, which is the payroll time. Everybody is finishing the payroll off and starting the new year. New rules and regulations are starting.
New tax year
is coming on the 6th of April. So everybody that runs a business is aware of this. Everybody has to do something to make a difference for that time.
Yeah,
so I've got several people speaking at the event.
You've got Simon Morgan, I know, coming from
HR department.
So he's going to talk about all the legislative changes that are happening. And then I guess you're just going to dovetail with that and say, right, so your systems need to be able to, adapt to that quickly.
That's it.
Because you've got to pay people at the end of the month.
Yeah. And that's exactly what our systems do. Yeah. So the following on from Simon would be the product specialist from Pegasus, a guy named Steve Bauer. And he will then show us the legislative changes that's coming in, how it's going to affect the software and how the customer base needs to do that. Mm. I also think it's a really good showcase of the products and that we are at the forefront of what we should be doing, and that anybody who uses it will always know that it's going to be right and ready for them to use. So that is the first event coming up. I also have several others coming up. I'm joining Tracy at the CICM event just as an attendee on the 17th.
You're going to learn so many golden nugget bits of information. You won't know where to put it all.
I'm also doing a short keynote speak at the next Ken Digital Meetup in Ashford around the subject of gamification. And I've used...
Gamification.
So it's using games in selling, in the process of selling.
Hello.
The principles of sales. So as you would have seen by now over social media, we've used things like the quiz very successfully in the past to make people aware of what we do. I've taken that on the road and... We've done quiz as entertaining at certain events, but the real thing is the questions are so that people learn about what Oasis is and what we do, and that's in a fun way. So you interact, you can't get away from it.
You can't. You should go to his Christmas party. Yeah. It was even on there. But you're doing a lot of other stuff. I mean, I can see that you're doing Easy Stock at Newbury, so you're not just Kemp focused.
South East.
So which is really good. And I see that you know, you've got where am I going with this mouse? Business Vision. You got to stand there this year.
Yes. I always understand Business Vision Live. It's one of the great shows for Oasis. It's a real good presence for us, but it's a real good mix of business people on the day to talk to. So
can you do Construction Expo later?
Construction Expo, both of them are very good. And I've got a lovely event coming up in June where lovely Tracy is doing a talk.
I wondered where she was going with all of this.
Quick, get it in. Yes.
Is that at the London Club again?
The London Golf Course, and that's again aimed at the reverse charge fat, because I think by then we really should start looking back at this for the implementation in October, because I think a lot of businesses probably realised last year that they just weren't ready.
Thank God it was postponed. Yeah.
I say the same thing.
It's going to be a bit, you know, and it's serious, guys. If you're out there, if reverse VAT is going to be encroaching into your business, go on to Oasis. That's oasis.co.uk. Go on their events page, click on it. Book it. It's also on Eventbrite, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Because you are really going to learn a lot about how to really fundamentally help your business with a loss of basically 20% of your cash flow, which is going to be a real big thing. And Kent Construction Expo, which I know you love.
I love it. Yeah.
So you've got loads of stuff going on.
We are very busy this year with getting our name out there. I'm also being invited on the Game TV tomorrow night, Wednesday night again. Yes, I'm really pleased about that.
Yeah, because you were on there a few weeks ago.
I was on there about 3 weeks ago.
Also, you have won an award.
Yes, I mean not to take away from that, Oasis won the Customer Service Award at the Ashford Business Award. So, yeah, I think that's
the end of last year.
That was a real big night for us. We were really pleased about that. That just kind of ended up the year really nicely for us as a company.
And in all honesty, it proves what a great customer service-led business you are.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a real big thing, you know.
Yeah, we were really proud of that.
So well done, and congratulations to you and your team for that.
Well, businesses are – I mean, Eddie and Joe, I'm sure you agree, businesses are all about people. You know, what you are is a people person. And, you know, you're not someone that's selling accounting software.
No.
You know, that's not what you're about. You know, you need to kind of get into a business, understand how it works.
It's important. We build relationships. I know a lot of people talk about that, but that really is how businesses work. We build relationships with people, and we try and maintain those relationships because we have to build a certain element of trust in what we do, because our business is what we do. It's our life, it's our bread and butter. Mm. And to get someone else to help us in that, you really have to trust that person. So it is about building a relationship with people.
It's about collaboration. Mm. Yeah. It's about, like, everybody here today. Mm. It's about passing on your knowledge.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring. Mm. I like that.
That is a theme we've kind of focused on today, isn't it? Mm. It's you know, it is about not being afraid to ask questions, you know, get advice, and, you know, ultimately learn from people that have kind of been what you're going through, maybe at an earlier stage in their career and in their business journey, and just kind of learning from that. And I think, you know, we can be so insular at times, can't we, as business owners?
Oh, we can be too British. But we can, can't we?
Indeed.
You know, at
least here. Well, I mean, your Spanish example, you know, people go out for a meal at 10 o'clock at night and it's a very social. You know, crikey, people don't go out at all during the week in the UK.
Not on a school night.
Not on a school night, is it?
Especially not in the winter. I mean, crikey, you know, we're all hermits.
To be fair, so. What Martin keeps going on about alcohol, he's got to give us a bad name and reputation.
Now, I am going to move it on quickly because there's something else I want to talk about, because, Bruce, you're very much in the same mould as Eddie, in that you wear different hats. And I know you also have a vegan food business. So just tell me about that very quickly.
We
just,
would tell you how good
on
it
the
tastes.
Sideline,
but he didn't bring
but
anything
he didn't bring
in.
Anything
the
in.
Food was so good that I ate it up before I got here. So we're just a very cottage industry type vegan food business that sell our food on a monthly basis at the Canterbury Vegan Market on the first Sunday of the month and at the Ashford Vegan Market now the fourth Saturday of the month. Mm-hmm. So,
And you're called?
We're called My Ikigai Limited, but we trade as the Vegan Food Junkies.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So it's easier to explain.
And presumably you have some kind of commercial kitchen operation where you make this?
No, this is a cottage industry, it currently happens from the home kitchen.
Okay.
Although we are currently in talks with the Coachworks here in Ashford via the Kent Food Hubs to have a shared kitchen space that we could use more often. Uh-huh. That would give us a bit more scope in getting our food moved on to coffee shops and more local businesses that could sell that out. Mm-hmm. I think that's the next step for us to take.
And does this
food business?
You know, apart from obviously your own kind of personal views with regard to kind of animal welfare and things like this, are you kind of conscious of the bigger kind of environmental kind of picture here? And
absolutely.
I mean, there's been a number of programs on the TV recently about. You know, the cost of actually producing meat in terms of what it does to the environment we all live in, you know, with
and the amount of water it uses to produce a pound of beef.
Land clearance, you know, to enable grazing and all of that kind of stuff.
Try to. I mean, we are an ethical business, if you can call it like that. We make absolutely sure that all the products we use are on the ethical consumers list. So when we use, as a vegan business, something like palm oil, I make sure it's sustainable palm oil, nothing that's going to be hurting the environment. I think that's important. This is my and my business partner in that business. It's our way of protesting being vegan. I'm not going to stand in front of someone with a placard.
No.
But by giving them good food made from local ingredients that hasn't traveled halfway around the world to become the food that they have is a way of an activism for us. And that's how we look at it.
Giving people an alternative.
Absolutely. So here is an alternative. Tastes just as good as what you normally would have. Mm-hmm. Why won't you have it?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And that is how we sell a lot of the food we sell. I don't put the vegan label on it. Mm-hmm. Because it's not needed. If I sell a sausage roll, it's a sausage roll.
Yeah.
You know, people kind of, you need to say what's in it. But quite frankly, if you buy one from Greg's, it's only got 6% meat in it. The rest is grain. So what difference does it make?
Yeah.
So I'm of opinion, if you buy the food we sell, doesn't have to have a label, it's good and it just saves something or animal or environment somewhere.
Yeah, I think
that's part
think
of how we
those
operate.
Kind of labels will disappear, won't they? Anyway,
I think so,
naturally. Yeah.
Oh, I've got a big thing about labeling everything.
Me too. Yeah. I really sure.
Oh, you know. Yeah. But I have to say, I've known Bruce for a while, and he knows I am a carnivore. Mm. I have to say, and I know he's just putting the cross up against me.
Me too.
But.
In fact, I'm going home to beef casserole tonight.
Oh, so. Sounds nice. Sounds nice.
Well, but, we're going to have to leave it there, Tracy. We are going to have to draw it to a close because we've got 30 seconds left. I just wanted Bruce to kind of tell everybody about that. So, the fourth Saturday in the month. Ashford.
And Ashford at the Coachworks.
And the first Sunday in the month.
At Westgate Towers in Canterbury.
In Canterbury, good. Well, that's the one that I'll be seeing you at. So,
and I'll be there on Sunday.
Saturday.
Yes, sorry.
Right. On that note, we are going to have to leave it here. We have run out of time. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with another couple of fabulous show guests. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Yes. Thank you to our wonderful studio guests.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
And we will be back with you in 2 weeks' time.
Yes, yeah, see you later.
Thanks,
bye.
Tracy.
Thank you. I'm